It's the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.
Welcome. It's that time for a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And I don't really have any kind of cool cold opening today, man.
I have one, man. And, you know, I thought about it.
My brain's a little fried right now. Not in, like, literal sense. Just a long week.
And I'm going to pull a U, Mark. I'm going to be a little perverted, you know, off the gate. And, you know,
man, don't ruin my reputation. I'm
not I said a little, you know, just, you know, you throw, you know, you want a little Italian seasoning on your steak. You grab a pinch of it, you throw it on there. It ain't all over everything. It's just a little bit. You know, there was, after we got done with the episode and I started going to sleep, last week, a fun fact popped in my head about Terminator 3. That I forgot to mention, and that they had considered Jennifer Lopez to be the female Terminator. And I was like, how great would that be to see Jennifer Lopez's butt just shaking on the screen? You know,
she goes through time.
Yes. I'm like, oh my God, we've never seen it on, that could be the first one. You know, and you'd have like two great things.
She kind of showed it off in that recent movie she did. What was that, Hustlers or some movie that came out years ago?
Maybe she did, you know. But it could have been in 2003, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, there's plenty of other places to watch her shake that thing.
There could. And then for the ladies that may be watching, they almost picked Vin Diesel. It was going to be a man that was the Terminator. They had thought about Vin Diesel. So there you go, ladies. You could have had Vin Diesel. Guys, you could have had J-Lo.
But instead, his path went on to be a gazillion fucking Fast and Furious movies.
That's right.
What could have been? It's funny because I am.
Or was that the Pitch Black? Was that because he did the first one in 99.
Yeah.
And then he didn't come back for the second or third Fast and Furious movie. Then in 2009, they came out with Fast and Furious. And then that's when he came back. Said, I got to save this franchise 1/4 mile at a time. Well, then
he went through where he tried to be a dramatic actor there and make movies.
A Man Apart. That was good, though.
A couple things.
But so cookie cutter, you know?
Then he did The Pacifier, you know, where
oh, yeah. He's like, I'm going to be fun with the kiddos. Yeah. Wacky Vin.
He was always like, he always felt like, I don't know, he feels like The Rock's little brother. Like,
yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, dude, that's hilarious.
And,
oh, man.
Poor Vin.
The Rock probably called him that, you know, at one point.
And, Vin. And, you know, actually, the Riddick movies were okay. I didn't mind those.
Yeah, he did good with that.
You know, he just never panned out to be, you know, he seemed like they were brewing him to be like this next huge action star, but instead he got caught in a kind of a single franchise for many years, which actually, I guess, I didn't watch it, but I saw online, I guess they had a trailer for the new one today.
Yeah.
And it's just like overblown franchise.
I agree, you know, and I know we'll get with that. Probably more of that in the news, you know.
I mean, but, I can't say I did write it now, the news, but
okay.
And I don't know. He made some headlines today saying that Lord of the Rings were the Fast and Furious, the Lord of the Rings of action franchises. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What action movies are you watching, dude? Like, yeah. He's obviously never seen a John Woo film or there's even Michael Bay's, some of his action scenes are better than action scenes in the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
And that's saying a lot. You know?
Yeah. He should have stuck with saying that the movies are, you know, iconic.
Zack Snyder.
You could have given away with that.
Directed the movie we're going to talk about today. Filmed really great action scenes. So I don't know what Vin Diesel was talking about, but anyway,
guy acts like he's had Spielberg direct some of those films, huh?
Yeah. Hey, well, Vin Diesel did appear in a Spielberg film. He was in Saving Private Ryan.
That's right. He was.
He played Caparzo.
Caparzo, baby.
Who would get shot trying to save the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he was in a Spielberg movie. So he does have that on his resume. But, you know,
Everybody gets one.
Yeah, everybody. Exactly. Everybody gets one. just one.
Yeah.
How was your week, man? Good.
It's I mean, I feel like it just flew by. I feel like we were in this spot.
It did, but just, it also felt long, you know, at the same time. But I had a lot going on this week. Doctor appointment.
It's busy
work,
week, you know? Yeah, doing shit.
Yeah, doing shit. And always doing shit. And now the week where the weekends seem like they fly by lately. And then this weekend fixing my middle son starts baseball practice tomorrow, so things are just gonna continue to get busy. And
it never stops.
The way the cookie crumbles. You know. And that's okay. But you know, this could be a good show today, man. We've got a we're gonna talk about the now, I guess it's almost officially closed Snyderverse. We'll talk about that soon. But before then, you know, you talk about Terminator 3, man. I had to go and we recorded Friday night, yeah. So yeah. Saturday, man, I ended up rewatching Dark Fate.
Nice.
It was just a little Terminator kick, and man, I kind of like it, man. It still holds up really well. Man, fucking, what's her name? Who plays Grace, man. She's badass in it.
Oh, yeah.
And my only thing with it is, like, I didn't catch this the first time I watched it. Okay, the Carl Terminator. Where is he getting the coordinates from to send to Sarah? Like, it's not even explained.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what? You conveniently know where these Terminators are going to land? I was like, I kept waiting for it. They never really say. I guess it's supposed to be like in his computer system or something, but it was just kind of bizarre. That's the only part of the movie I didn't quite get. Like, it was kind of a subplot to give Sarah a reason to show up in the film, and it's not really explained very well. You know, but. You know, it's still a better sequel to Terminator 2 than Terminator 3 was. You know, I'll give it that.
There's a Reddit forum that is about how, just based on the movie, there's no way Carl would know about the Legion Terminator. For it's from another timeline.
Right.
So it's like, how would he know? How did he know that it was going to be there?
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. But overall, I still think it's a pretty cool movie, man. I did enjoy Dark Fate. It had some really good action sequences in it. And I didn't realize that was Diego Luna plays, not Diego Luna. Diego Luna is from Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Diego. He's from Austin, though. Who played the bad guy in Dark Fate.
I like that he worked out with Arnold. And Arnold built a training regimen to help him look, you know, more like a Terminator.
Gabriel Luna.
Yeah. And he you know, he played the part pretty well. I felt like it was, you know, pretty, like, you know, obviously, you know, T-1000, Robert, think of his last name.
Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick.
The man with two first names.
Yes. He obviously, you know, legendary performance, you know, would run without breathing to look more robotic. You know, this guy, he looked like he kind of did the same thing. He looked like he was a robot when he ran.
The Rev 9 pretty cool. Is a freaking cool design. And he's from Austin, Texas, so he's a Texas boy.
There we go, man. That's what I'm talking about.
Mackenzie Davis, she's a girl who played Grace, so she's badass. There's a lot of badasses in the film. I think that's why it's forgiven for some of its subplot issues. But I actually like Dark Fate, man. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know my nick with it. And it's like a small little thing, but overall, I think it's a great action film. I like all the sequences pretty much. I like that, you know, you didn't have Edward Furlong do anything but just die, you know, because it's like, you know, he had his chance, but instead he decided to smoke crack.
Yeah.
You know,
and Gabriel Luna, he's, I didn't realize he plays Tommy in The Last of Us. That's him in there too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So that's pretty cool, man. But yeah, so that, I mean, I watched. So I went back and watched Dark Fate, man, and kind of enjoyed it.
I'm gonna have to watch it.
I've had so much. I've been so busy this week. That's really all I watched other than last Sunday night's episode of The Last of Us. I know the new one came out today. It came out early because of Super Bowl Sunday, but I'll probably watch it tomorrow night since didn't really have time tonight before we recorded. Because I already saw some stuff on the internet I'm trying to stay away from until I watch it. Since it aired tonight on HBO Max. You watched last week's Last of Us, right? You're caught up. Yeah,
sure did.
Let's get into it a little bit. We get Joel and Ellie back on the road, man, as they continue to go to find the Fireflies, and they are coming across Kansas City, and they run into essentially they can't get through the city the way they want to because of blocked cars and down cars, and so they run into some trouble in the name of in the video game they're called the Hunters, this group, and I don't know if they'll use the same name in the show. And Joel gets into a little firefight with them and has to take a few of them out, and we get to witness some really nice quiet moments in this episode. Though developing the relationship between Joel and Ellie, the thing with the dirty magazine is really funny because that's actually right from the game, so that was pretty funny.
Yeah,
cute little poop joke in there with Joel and Ellie. And we witness Ellie using the gun that she took from Bill's house, and basically saving Joel and using the gun. And Joel has to kind of have a parenting moment where he explains to her, you know, like, "Hey, maybe you should not have you shouldn't have to do that being your age." And Joel tells Ellie tells him, "Well, it's not the first time I've had to do it, but." So getting to see some quiet moments between Joel and Ellie in this episode, which were a lot of those were taken from the game. We're introduced to a new character, a lady leader of this group, and she's not from the game, so she's introduced to the show. And they try to get some sleep. Joel puts out some glass, a broken glass board, and tells Ellie, "You know, so I can hear it if I wake up." But he doesn't hear it, and the episode ends as we see them at gunpoint with two young men holding him at gunpoint, which I knew who they are because I played the game. Their names are going to be called Henry and Sam, and we'll be introducing them in the new episode. I'm not going to get into what happens in the game as far as Henry and Sam because I don't know how they're going to play it out in the show.
Yeah.
But I will say if they do play it out like it is in the show, just be prepared to have a little heartbreak. That's all I'll say. I think it was another good, solid episode. The crazy thing about The Last of Us is viewership keeps going up week after week. I mean, it's which is unheard of. A lot of times shows drop viewers, but The Last of Us keeps gaining viewers because it's just it's the best thing on television right now. And in the world of streaming and streaming wars right now, people are always looking for something new to watch. And this show is just it's solid fucking entertainment. What did you think about this week's episode?
I liked it, and I got to see some gameplay. When they enter Kansas City in the game,
it was a different city in the game. For some reason, they're using Kansas City in this, but it was like, I can't remember what city they went to in the game, but still same format.
Yeah. Got a guy that's help me. And then he buckles up. Let's go. You know, drives through. It's an ambush.
Yeah.
And he ends up crashing into a shop. It looks like, it looks pretty, pretty darn close. There's, a few things that were different.
Oh, for sure.
I think instead of the brick getting thrown, they shoot at him instead. But I guess, they're trying to, just give it a different look, not make it shot for shot. But it looked good. I like the, that you've got, emotional stuff in there. The kid that's like, "I'm going to kill you." And, he gets shot through the spine because she shoots really low and pretty much paralyzes the kid that's trying to kill Joel. And he's just like, my mom. And you're like, people are doing what they have to do to survive. And unfortunately, young kids are going to get killed because they're dumb and they want to take on Pedro Pascal, who is the best at protecting young kids. Magical kids. In fact, experts predict by 2050, every show on the internet will be Pedro Pascal escorting a magical child to a destination.
Wow, really?
Yep. Expert. Yeah, I read it somewhere. It's going to happen. It's a joke. Speaking about jokes, Saturday Night Live did a Pedro Pascal Last of Us Super Mario Kart trailer. I don't know if you've seen it. It's freaking hilarious. Pedro Pascal with a sawed-off shotgun saying, "It's-a me, Mario." Do it. You know, it just looks believable. It was supposed to be a joke and it's hilarious, but it's also like, make it. Let's see this. You know, he's been on TV since Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, he's been around a while.
He played a vampire in one of the earlier episodes. I had no idea.
Yeah, now he's finally getting this big. I mean, I would say he got his big break a few years ago when he was on Narcos, but
yeah,
now he's really starting to get, you know, with The Mandalorian and The Last of Us, and you know, he appeared in Wonder Woman 84, starting to really get the notoriety he deserves. You know,
How you start. It's how you finish, baby.
That's right. Rightfully so.
That's how it is.
You know, before Jeremy Renner did The Hurt Locker, he was on a lot of TV shows and things like that, just trying to make it. And sometimes it just takes that one big break. And for Pedro, it was Narcos, and then the man landing the role of the Mandalorian. And now he's one of those actors that, man, he just he has that face that makes you feel comfortable watching him. It feels like he could be your next door neighbor and your uncle. Yeah. And it's just something. And he's got a calm, cool demeanor. And I think that's why he's perfect as Joel, because Joel in the games is a calm, cool, collective, but also will do what he has to do to protect people around him. And you see that with Pedro's version of Joel. He will fuck you up if he has to.
Hell yeah, dude.
And I think that's what's great about him. And I wasn't sure about his casting when I first heard it, because it wasn't maybe who I pictured as Joel. But four episodes in, man, I'm sold. You know, he definitely sells it to me, and so does Bella Ramsey. She's selling me as Ellie, because I was thinking Ellie. You know, I just had a different view of what she should be, but Bella's doing great in the role. She's really good.
I didn't realize she was like 20 years old.
Yeah, but they liked her for her younger look, though, you know.
Yeah,
because Ellie's supposed to only be 14.
Yeah, but she, like you said, she's kind of got that Ralph Macchio face, like a man child. She's like a woman child, right. You know.
She's great, man. I really like her. She's growing on me for sure. But overall, I just like the look of the show, the aesthetic of the way it looks like they took the game and put it on the big screen and everything that happens around. And I've read a few complaints that, you know, you still get these people that are, you know, ADHD, and they want there's not enough action in it. You know, think more things need to happen. Like, man, that's not what The Last of Us is about. You know, Neil Druckmann, the creator of The Last of Us, he said, you know, in the game, we put clickers in there and infective for you to fight, because you need a mechanism to move the game forward. But if you really pull that back, the story was about Joel and Ellie and the people surviving in this world. It was never about the infected.
That's how you make a great action movie.
Yeah.
It's not like boatloads of action.
Right.
I mean, to cut in, it's like, think about some of the greatest action movies ever. Terminator 2, 20 minutes of action. We talked about it when we did it. You know, and The Last of Us, you know, it has, I feel like it has more than just that small little snippet of action, but it's the emotional connection and the relationships that really bring a movie like a show like that together.
Yeah.
Or, you know, for an action movie,
it's the journey. It's not just jumping to action scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you do have directors that, can tell there are directors like, you know, second John Woo reference in one show, everybody that's ever listened to Rodeo Podcast knows he's my favorite action director of all time. But John Woo is a type that has the ability to tell an emotional journey of a story with loads of action.
Yeah.
And it works because he knows how to balance it. Not every director can do that. A director like Michael Bay is not going to balance that as well. It's going to come across as just a silly, big, noisy action film. But then there are directors like Woo, and then there's stories with really great action that only need 10 minutes of action to tell a great story and still be a great action television show or movie. And that's what The Last of Us is. It's about the journey and building to those moments. And there will probably be some great action moments in the show, I'm sure. I mean, I've played the game, so I know there's some great moments.
Yeah.
But even in the game, it never felt like I was playing an action game. It felt like I was playing a journey with these two characters. And when I got to the end of part one of the game, you're fully satisfied for where that journey takes you. I think as long as viewers hang on to the show and keep watching, they're going to be satisfied with how this journey will take them too. you know, as we get closer to the end of part one, which they say the whole first game is in the whole first season. So we'll see how they do with five episodes to go, if they're able to close this out in one season, or they're just teasing us and they're going to move it on to season two and, you know, a little bit. You never know.
You never know, man.
But man, just good stuff, man. I really like, I had faith in this show that it was going to be good, being that it was on HBO from the showrunner Chernobyl, which I've never watched, but it was really good. Mm-hmm. But it was still part of you with video game adaptions. Part of you was thinking, it's going to do something wrong, because video game adaptions have just had that stigma. But The Last of Us is proving it wrong. And now, as we talked about in previous weeks, Amazon's jumping on board to get a God of War show made, a Tomb Raider show made. You know, all of a sudden, this is how you do video game properties. Let's not cram into 2-hour movies. Let's do television shows.
Exactly. Speaking about, cramming something into a 2-hour movie, we'll get into that. funny you referenced that.
So anything else you watched this week, man? I mean, that's really all I kind of checked out was the new Last of Us.
Oh, man. I'm with you, man. That's kind of the only thing. I think I started to watch some other stuff, and I just never really got the ball rolling on it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when you're a dad, you got a bunch of kids in the room, you already know that TV might get taken away from you.
Right.
I want to watch Moana. Like, darn it. We've seen this 50 times in the past week.
But dad. Yeah. You're like, okay, whatever.
I'm going to see the crab.
Yeah. So let's talk a little news before we get into this feature film. There's not a whole ton. Speaking of Amazon, man, they are developing – this kind of came out of nowhere. I'm not sure if it has anything to do with Marvel Studios or not. Well, no, I guess not. Sony owns the rights. They're going to make a Spider-Man Noir live-action TV show.
Or it's in development. I saw that.
Interesting.
Do we know if Cage is going to voice the character again?
I don't know. I mean, he's voicing the character in Spider-Verse 2, but is Spider-Man Noir popular enough for its own TV show? And is the genre of Noir popular enough nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's, you know, we have the Sin City movies that kind of have a mix of modern and Noir and stuff. I was trying to think about this, like, is that genre even like a real thing anymore? You know, Noir films and Noir stories. And obviously Spider-Man is a popular name, but I mean, it's, the Noir Spider-Man to that point where, like, you could do a whole TV show with it. I don't know. We'll see. You know?
Hey, you know, maybe it works.
Yeah.
Maybe it works.
You know, Amazon, I think, is looking for their next big hit. You know, like I said, we just missed our trying God of War and Tomb Raider, because, I mean, I think the Lord of the Rings was not – I think it was successful, but maybe not the success they were hoping it was going to be. And, you know, of course, they're invested into 5 years on that show. Hell, yeah. I still need to finish it. You know, just kind of got like everybody else. I enjoyed the first 2 or 3 episodes, and it kind of got a little boring kind of fast. I'm like, So we'll see what Amazon does with Spider-Man Noir. Meanwhile, Apple TV. That's the other thing I did watch. I don't have Apple TV, but you can watch like the first episodes for free. I watched the first episode of For All Mankind. It's an alternate universe where what if the Russians land on the moon first? And it stars Joel Kinnaman, you know, from the Suicide Squad movies. And it's pretty good, man. It almost makes me want to subscribe to Apple TV. So I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
That's fun. You just jogged my memory on the only other thing I watched. We were looking through the For Sale movies at Vudu. And I noticed Peyton List made a movie. And, you know, we talk about Peyton List every once in a while, Mark. And I'm like, what is this movie? And it looked like it was a good concept. It's called The Friendship Test. I didn't want to spend $5 on it because there's some very, very mixed reviews. It's a horror movie. And basically, I rented it on Amazon for $1. So I was like, okay, $1. Yeah, I don't mind spending $1 seeing a bad movie. She goes to this garage sale with her friends, and there was this old lady, and she's like, it's a game. It's the friendship test. If your friendship doesn't last, neither do you. And so they were just like, okay. So I guess like their friendship kind of wavers in the mix, and they try and make it about this multiverse kind of thing where there's alternate versions of yourself.
The only question I have is, does Peyton get even half naked in it?
No.
No.
So there's a sex scene in it, but she's like clothed and, you know,
the so angle that there's no point in watching it ever.
No point in watching it. Yeah, there's not. But, you know, they had some good concepts. They were just like, I felt like they were just like, let's throw a multiverse thing in there. And it's just screwed everything up even worse. You could have been mediocre. And then you just went for, you know, you know, so that was it.
But this show will give me a reason to subscribe to Apple Plus, and that is the in-development MonsterVerse TV show that's coming out. Apple Plus. And they did say that they did confirm that Godzilla and other kaijus will appear in the show, and it will tie into the films and the MonsterVerse. And I guess I believe it's already started filming. It's in active development, so for a release, I would imagine with the Godzilla vs. Kong Part 2, I would think maybe they want this out next year when the movie comes out.
Probably
be a big year for Godzilla next year. That's kind of cool. And the other bit of news, like I said, it was kind of a slower news week, but this will lead into our feature film. Is first off, Warner Brothers was wondering, you know, with James Gunn announcing all these DC properties, what happened to Constantine 2? And it's still in development. Keanu Reeves has had several meetings with the studio already. They're working on it. It's probably going to be part of the new Elseworlds line of movies, but Constantine 2 has not been canceled. It's definitely on the horizon for Keanu Reeves to come back and do that.
And that's nice to hear.
Yeah, that'll be cool. And then secondly, today we got a very, very cool teaser poster for The Flash that says Worlds Collide, and with the bat symbol hanging over The Flash. And the trailer will be hit this Sunday. By the time y'all hear this episode, y'all will have seen the new trailer for The Flash. And I'm pretty excited about this now to see what it looks like. And, you know, it's interesting, the marketing for the poster. People already mentioned how The Flash is kind of small and facing away from you. I would imagine they're going to have to market this movie without Ezra Miller's face too much front and center and more focus on the heroes of the film, and that's The Flash and Batman.
Probably.
Because, unfortunately, you know, Ezra is doing better and has promised James Gunn and Warner Brothers that he will continue to work towards getting themselves better. I guess I should use his proper pronoun, even though that stuff weirds me out kind of because it's still a guy in my mind. And so, you know, I think Warner Brothers realizes that, you know, they have to market this movie smart, you know, and sell it with Michael Keaton and The Flash, and hopefully reviews help it. Early reviews, the test screenings have been through the roof for the film, and James Gunn has given it high praises. He's seen the film. So kind of looking forward to seeing The Flash this summer when it hits. You know, so it should be cool. And which is a perfect segue in today's featured film, right? We're going to kind of look back, man, on the Snyderverse and what was and what could have been. And I guess they're calling The Flash is going to kind of be the finale of the Snyderverse in a way. As we move on to James Gunn's universe after that, even though we have Aquaman coming out later this year, but we're looking back today at the full 4-hour version of Justice League, which is also known as Zack Snyder's Justice League, or the Snyder Cut or whatever you call it. And, a far different movie than what you may have seen in theaters. Cause you know, there's still probably a lot of people might be listening to this show that have not seen the Snyder Cut. They only know the 2-hour version that appeared in theaters a few years ago and was put together by Josh Whedon, who was brought in to direct and finish the film after Zack Snyder had to back away because his daughter took her life, and Snyder had to back away from the project and focus on his family. And never going to fault a man for doing that because that's much more important. What should have happened, though, was and this is my opinion, I think, of where Warner Brothers messed up was just pull the marketing for the film. Okay, we're not putting out the summer. You know, Zack Snyder's on break. Let's finish the film later.
Yeah,
and backed it up. Instead, they tried to brought Whedon in. He did some reshoots and shot some new scenes and butchered the hell out of Snyder's version to a 2-hour version, which I won't say it's terrible. You know, the 2-hour version. I mean, it's a watchable movie, but it's not great.
No.
You know, and Snyder's
for good reason.
Yeah.
You know, I won't blame Josh for all of it.
No.
Because the studio said, hey, you got to make this into 2 hours.
Right.
One. Then they said, well, you know what? We want it to be more lighthearted. We want more jokes in here. And guess what? You've got like a very short time to do it.
Yeah.
So you rush it. You're cutting the amount of runtime. You're telling them to add all these extra things. I mean, there's no wonder it was a jumbled up.
Yeah.
You
bad
know,
CGI.
Mess. Yeah. Bad CGI. I mean, you name it. You know, so,
yeah.
Yeah.
So due to an internet campaign that was with the hashtag release the Snyder Cut, Warner Brothers couldn't ignore it. It got really strong, one of the strongest internet campaigns I've ever seen in my life. And and they gave Snyder some money to go and finish
$70 million
film. And yeah. They even shot a few new scenes for it to add in. Not much, not as many new scenes as people think. A lot of this stuff was already shot.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It was a few pickups.
Changed up. Yeah.
It was a few pickup shots here and there. And then the epilogue. That was all kind of new stuff. But a lot of stuff was already shot. Into a full 4-hour version. What people aren't clear on, a lot of people said that, you know, originally the plan was there was going to be a Justice League part one and part two. And people have asked, is this 4-hour film part one and part two? And Snyder has came out and said, no, this was part one. Part two was going to be a whole other film. Now, so what I think would have happened is Snyder had talked about his original cut being about 3 hours for part one. And then part two would have been more stuff. So I imagine there might have been some stuff in this that might have been saved for part two. Or he would just been a 3-hour cut. Some stuff would have been left on the cutting room floor. Yeah. But the most remarkable thing about this 4-hour film is, one, it's vastly different from the theatrical cut. Two, it's fucking epic. It really is. It has this truly epic feel to it, and it flows extremely well for a 4-hour film. It moves really well. There's not hardly a dull moment in it. You know, because sometimes you watch a 3-hour movie, they feel long. Honestly, the Snyder Cut doesn't feel long.
No, you know, not at all.
It flows really well. It airs out all the characters so much better, from Superman's subplot to how he comes back to life, which is extremely rushed in the Whedon version, and it makes a lot more sense in this version. It gives us a lot more subplot to Aquaman that leads into his film that makes sense.
Yep.
Definitely tells a much better version of Cyborg's story. And it definitely gives the Flash a whole lot more to do, which I think will help people understand where he's at when the Flash movie comes out, because the Flash is just sort of thrown into the theatrical version. And then Wonder Woman.
Batman.
Batman's given a little more to do.
Well, and he's shown as this person who's very reverent and, you know, towards Superman, and that he's, you know, appreciative of him and respects him, you know, versus, you know, like an awkward relationship that he kind of shows in the Whedon cut. I feel like Wonder Woman gains the least, other than, you know, subtracting the weird Flash stuff.
Landing order, you know. Yeah. But I also feel like Wonder Woman does just enough in this version, because we've already had her solo film and they've developed her to that point, I think, where we don't need as much from her in this movie, I think.
She's the one you could, you know, really, you know, do without having like extra stuff, because she's already developed. It's Cyborg that you, you know, you really appreciate all the extra stuff that they do, because now he actually feels like a full-fledged character.
He has a story arc.
Yeah.
Because like in the theatrical version, he kind of came across, if I remember correctly, as kind of an unappreciative kind of asshole, you know?
Yeah.
For everything. And in this, his storyline is more fleshed out, makes a lot more sense as to what he did. Same with Steppenwolf. We haven't even talked about the bad guy yet. Steppenwolf just sort of shows up in the theatrical version. It's like, oh, I want these Unity boxes and I'm going to destroy the world. And you're like, okay, why? But then in the Snyder Cut, we understand more why, because we get all the background from Darkseid, and Darkseid is manipulating his soldiers to find these Unity boxes so he can take over this world. There is kind of
owe him 10,000 more worlds.
There is kind of a subplot where I guess Steppenwolf has disappointed Darkseid at a time, and they don't really get into it heavy. But as a viewer, you just assume, okay, he owes Darkseid some work.
And now we have to save the planet from being terraformed so it can support this other life form. Where have we seen this before? No, I'm just kidding.
The CGI on Steppenwolf is way better than it was in the theatrical version because they went
big time. That.
But Steppenwolf's motives and his reasoning is all makes a lot more sense in the Snyder version. So much more to this film than the theatrical version. One thing that bothered me about the theatrical version was the way Superman is brought back to life. It just sort of happens. You're like, what? But it's so much more fleshed out in the Snyder Cut. Yeah. It makes a lot more sense.
We get the black suit.
Yeah. The black suit, which is cool and awesome. I like the fact too, that in the 4-hour cut, as it's epic and it's action packed, but there's a lot of really great moments in this movie, whether it's Clark spending time with Lois and his mom when he comes back to life, or even Batman and Wonder Woman taking time to crack a joke. I really like the Flash and Aquaman kind of mess with each other when Flash accidentally knocks Aquaman down. Aquaman points at him like, you know, there's a lot of really yeah. great little moments like that in this, that the movie wasn't afraid to take the time to do, to develop these characters in the league. And that's the biggest thing about it. It's like at the end of this 4-hour version, you feel like they're the Justice League and they're working together to defeat Steppenwolf. I never felt like the theatrical version doesn't feel like that at all. There's no epicness to it. You never buy that they're a team. You know, we're this just, I mean, I'll be honest, the Snyder Cut has become one of my favorite superhero team movies of all time. I really like this version of the movie a lot.
Well, yeah, you've got a lot of moments where the team collaborates, they're talking, you know, they're, you know, trying to assemble to, you know, be that team that Earth needs to protect, you know, the world from Darkseid and, you know, demon, the parademons.
And just the musical score throughout the film gives it this epic feel. The fight at the end doesn't feel rushed like it does in the theatrical version, mm-hmm. as they try to destroy Steppenwolf's fortress and they're hoping that Superman shows up. You know, that's another great moment. Like, they teased it in the trailer, and then we didn't get it in the theatrical version where Superman visits Alfred. I mean, it's a very quick moment, but it's great, you know, and things like that. They give Alfred more to do in this version, yeah. which I felt Jeremy Irons was never given his proper chance to really play Alfred. He had some small moments in Batman vs. Superman, but then he gets more to do in this version for sure. I like how they did that. And they left some of the jokes that were filmed in there, but Snyder says everything that's in this film, he shot. He didn't use anything Whedon
no
shot.
Whedon stuff. Yeah.
So the I'm rich joke, that's Snyder. You know, the jokes the Flash makes, those are all his.
Yep. And I like the hot dog. That's pretty funny. Yeah. Eating the hot dog.
I'm trying to remember the theatrical version, was that Flash stuff with Iris even in it? I don't even remember that being in the movie.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So that's all added
in. You don't get the, you know, you don't get the introduction that you get here.
Right.
This story kind of, you know, really reveals and, you know, buffs up all the teammates really. And you get a good sense of everybody. And understand kind of where everyone stands and where everyone's character is kind of going. And I feel like Flash is a wholer superhero in this one. He's not as timid. You know, he definitely is dorky, which he's, you know, he works in a lab.
Yeah,
it's how he is. You know, so.
But I hated the theatrical version compared to this version.
Well, Warner Brothers initially.
Barry Allen, that is.
Yeah, they initially said that they wanted to be more like Marvel and have those little quips, those little jokes, and you know, I feel like they should have just, you know, let Zack Snyder drive. All right, he's driving already. Don't try and grab the wheel. Don't say get out of the car and put someone else. He's driving just fine. You could have gotten to where you wanted to go if he would have just stayed there. Cool. Like you said, Mark, you know, really, it's bittersweet. You get all this footage, And, you know, it becomes a much more enjoyable film, a film you don't mind watching over and over again versus a film that you're like, oh, you know, one and done, yeah. You know, and, you know, you're just like, man, if they would have just left it alone, just,
right.
And just pushed left it alone,
pushed it back fine. 6 months or whatever, even a year.
Yeah.
You know, instead of summer of 2017 or whatever it was, put it out in summer of 2018. Yeah. You know? They were so busy trying to catch Marvel at the time that they didn't think about what they were doing. You know, and I want to go back a minute for The Flash. I hated the theatrical version of Barry Allen because it just felt like he was stupid and annoying. Where this version, it's fleshed out more. His jokes make more sense. His awkwardness makes more sense. And then he completely redeems himself with his awkwardness with his fucking awesome run at the end to help stop Steppenwolf and the Unity Box, you know. And none of that's in the theatrical version. And so you don't understand the motives behind him or even Cyborg because their stories aren't there in the theatrical versions.
Yeah.
And I think the most frustrating part about this film is towards the end. And when I say frustrating, I don't mean that in a bad way, is the way it sets up the future of the DC extended universe if it had happened. You know, we get the look at the bleak future where Darkseid has taken over most of Earth and he's controlling Superman. And Batman is forced to team up with Deathstroke and Hera and the Joker.
And Joker.
You know, and to try to save this world. And I actually, the scene with Jared Leto's Joker at the end is him and Batman kind of exchanging words is pretty well done, man. Jared really brings it in that scene. And I really like it. It's kind of cool to hear Batman go, make no mistake, I will fucking kill you. I was like, whoa, Batman said the F word. It's a great little scene, man. And it makes me also reminds me that, you know, I never had a problem with Jared playing the Joker. You know, his version was a little different, but he was never really given a chance to really play the role. You know, and I wonder what we would have got from him if we had gotten more, you know.
I like the version that we get here and not the, you know, gangsterish version. I like this makeup and his demeanor a little bit better, a lot better, actually.
Yeah.
And I think had it been played this way. From the get-go, you know, I think more people would, you know, we'd feel the same.
Yeah. And not only that, what about we never got our Affleck Batman movie facing off against Deathstroke? How fucking awesome would that have been, you know?
That would have been good.
And I think that's the biggest disappointment. It's like if you look at the DCEU, you know, they made three films that I put up there as I think are really great. That's Man of Steel, Wonder Woman, and the Snyder Cut of Justice League. I think all three of those movies are really good. I really think the Snyder Cut of Justice League, like I said, I think it's one of my favorite superhero team movies I've ever seen. I really like this version a lot. I think it's epic. I think it's got great moments. It's got great badass scenes. I know you're a big Marvel guy, man. And like the thing about like Infinity War and Endgame is like, they're good, but they have some great moments, but I feel like the 4-hour Snyder Cut feels a little more epic because of the way the story plays out, you know? Because I think the biggest problem with Endgame is, like, Infinity War is so action-packed. Endgame kind of slows it down. And then you have to wait till the end to get the really, truly great epic moments, you know? And where Snyder Cut is full of quite a few epic moments throughout the 4-hour runtime, you know? And I think that's why I like it on a certain level.
There are, man, the battle with the Amazons. That's pretty friggin' epic.
Yeah, Snyder does epic well, man. His action scenes are well shot. You know, he still likes the slow-mo camera some, but he doesn't overuse it in the Snyder film cut, I don't think, you know.
I was surprised that this film was not shot in 4K. It's not. He shot it in 35mm. Which is, I believe, the same thing they shot 7 in, which makes sense. You got all these shadows.
Yeah.
And it really, you know, picks up all of that darkness really, really well.
I do find
so you see a movie like 7 and a movie like this kind of look about the same with the darkness.
I do find it interesting that he shot, that he released it in 4:3 instead of 16:9. He says that's how it was intended. I'm like, what do you mean that's how it was intended? That bothers me a little bit. I'd rather have a widescreen version than Snyder Cut. But you know, it's fine. You know, I've kind of gotten used to it now. I've seen it about 3 or 4 times. I've kind of gotten used to it.
That's weird because widescreen, usually you can put more on the screen.
Right.
Get more in your shots. But
so, yeah, I don't know why he chose to release it like that. I've actually looked to see if there was ever a reasoning for it, and I've never been able to find anything as to why Snyder released it that way. But I also, you know, think that I watched this movie this week, and I just think, man, what could have been? I feel like the DCEU could have been saved. There's a few bad apples in there, but I don't think they were so far off from saving things. They could have just said, hey, this is canon, the Snyder Cut. We're going from here. Let's move forward. But they just felt the need. I sometimes feel like not just the unsuccess of the theatrical version, but also Wonder Woman 84, them choosing to release it during the pandemic, not being as successful, I think maybe have caused them, Warner Brothers, more harm than good by putting out these films the way they did. You know, but now we move forward from here and we get the Flash. Well, we have Shazam in a few weeks and the Flash and Aquaman. Then we move on to James Gunn's new DC Studios universe. But I watched this and I just think, man, you know, we could have had this. We could have had an epic universe that could have rivaled Marvel's cinematic universe. And it shows the abilities they had right here in the Snyder Cut of Justice League of what could have been.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that we're not going to get any further because, man, I really wanted to see Darkseid take over the Earth and see evil Superman. I mean, you know, and it feels like they kind of gave Henry Cavill the shaft by telling me he's back and then he's not back. And then I go back and I watch this and just, you know, you can kind of see it on his face how much he enjoys playing the role. He's really, he's really acting his ass off to play a really good, believable Superman. I mean,
I saw this old clip of him and he explains how he picked a football team to root for. And he said, well, I'm going to root for the Chiefs because if, you know, Superman was real, he grew up in Kansas, he'd root for the Chiefs. That's and so awesome. He was like, just funny little things like that.
Yeah.
He's for people I don't know, he's a really big nerd.
Yeah.
Like he likes Warhammer 4K. He likes, you know, putting together those figurines. He likes comics. He reads them. He could be bigger nerds than both of us put together. Who knows? But he's super invested in everything he did as Superman. And it's, you know, it's sad.
The charity work he did as Superman, dressing up, visiting kids. I mean,
yeah, man,
he's a relentlessly nice guy. People say that, you know, apparently on sets, he's always looking out for people, making sure everybody has everything they need. Just a super down to earth person. And, you know, and it sucks, man, because I really like him as Superman. Was hoping to see more. You know, Affleck's Batman is fine. You know, I don't know if he's my favorite, but I like what Affleck brought to the role. I think he's given a lot more to do in this version than he is in even Batman vs. Superman, and he grew on me. Of course, Gal Gadot, she's wonderful as Wonder Woman. And Jason Momoa, I mean, badass. Aquaman should be badass, and Jason Momoa is badass. You know, I would not mess with Jason Momoa in real life. I would believe he could kick my ass.
Heck no, dude. Not as Conan, not as Aquaman.
And Ezra Miller, I think his Flash is much better in this version than it was in theatrical. And I'm looking forward to his film and see what he can do as Barry Allen. And I hope it's successful. And I hope Ezra gets his personal life together and he's able to maybe continue on as a Flash in future films if the movie is good. Because I didn't like him in the role at first, but after the Snyder Cut of the movie, I really do. I like him a lot more in the movie. And Ray Fisher was fine as Cyborg, but unfortunately he probably talked himself out of ever working for Warner Brothers again, as he constantly blasted the studio for various things. And hey, you know, that's the choices he made to do so.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's the way it is. And maybe one day we'll get an actual dark side on the big screen in a full blown DC Studios universe where he comes and kicks a lot of ass and does a lot of evil shit, you know, and go from there. But overall, man, I think the Snyder Cut is freaking awesome. And I'm glad that the fans were able to, you know, viral help market that, this. To
yeah,
get
man.
And they
wanted this. I mean, Warner Brothers thought this would be great for their HBO Max platform, and it was. It really brought them a lot. It's
still one of their top.
A lot of, yeah.
Release titles on HBO Max.
Mm-hmm. Now, we need to pressure them to release the Fury Cut. There's more to Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, and we need to see it, baby. I want to see more Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Christopher Reeve.
I would like to see the Iron Cut of Suicide Squad. He says it's much tighter and a little bit darker. And he says it wouldn't take him $70 million to finish it. He said he could finish it with – he said most of it's already shot. It would just take some re-editing. But don't know if it'll happen. Or what about the Schumacher Batman Forever cut that's out there?
Oh,
I would love to see that. It's supposed to be darker and more in line with the Burton films. Mm-hmm. Apparently it's pretty much done too. Just needs some cleaning up. I would love to see, you know, now that you have these platforms for these streaming, you know, I would like to see that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because if people want it. But, you know, we have to move on from the Snyderverse, unfortunately. But at least we got some great films. And the films haven't gone away. We can still enjoy them. And Snyder Cut and Justice League is definitely one of those I'm going to enjoy for a long time. Like I said, I really like this movie quite a bit. I love Man of Steel, too. You know, as much as the Marvel Universe has been fun, there's been a couple of great DC movies in this short-lived DCE universe that I can still go back and enjoy. And I just wish Henry could have gotten to play Superman in at least one more Superman film, not a team film, but on his own for once. But
yeah,
oh well, it is what it is, I guess.
It is what it is, man.
But Snyder Cut Justice League, it's on HBO Max. If you have not seen it, sit down and watch it. You don't have to watch all 4 hours in one day. I didn't watch it 4 hours in one day this time. I watched it over a couple of days. It is hard to sit down and watch 4 hours of a movie.
It's even harder to stand up and watch a 4 hour movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice because it's told in 6 parts. So you can chapter break it easily. Like, okay, I'm on part 3. Oh, yeah. I'm going to stop right here.
You know? Exactly. That's probably the way I would do it, especially if you got a busy life.
Yeah. Cause at one point they were going to release it as a 6-part miniseries and they decided against it and put it together as a whole movie. And I think that's better. I'm glad they released it as a whole film.
So, yeah.
Technically 7 parts. If you count the epilogue, cause the epilogue's almost 15, 20 more minutes.
You know,
at the end of the film. So watch the Justice League Snyder Cut. If you like, I think you'll enjoy it. And, you know, long live the Snyderverse.
That's right. Long live the Snyderverse, baby.
Oh, man. So next week, we're going to do a movie that Matt's basically been kissing my ass to do for a couple years now. And, well, it's true. I mean, you know.
I do want to do this movie. I've been wanting this.
You know, we just did an Arnold movie last week, and we had Jason Momoa, Henry Cavill, big guys. Matt's got this thing for tough men. I don't know what it is. And so next week we're going to talk Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes film from the – this came out in the 90s? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was 95, 96. Yeah,
where Taco Bell is a gourmet restaurant. And that is Demolition Man.
At the end of a century – ravaged by violence, a society of perfect order will arise. Criminals will be frozen and reprogrammed in cryogenic prisons.
The prisoners are ice cubes. Their criminal instincts are being reprogrammed as they sleep.
Aggression and deviant behavior will be totally eliminated.
He's a criminal the likes of which you have never seen. In a bad time, he was the worst.
I'm gonna love running this place.
But in the year 2032...
This morning, Simon Phoenix escaped from this cryo facility. We are, quite frankly, not equipped to deal with the situation.
Amidst a world of peace and calm...
We're police officers. We're not trained for this kind of violence.
How was the fiendish Simon Phoenix apprehended back in the 20th?
In the end, it took just one man. John Spartan.
You mean the Demolition Man?
The conditions of your parole are full reinstatement into the SAPD and immediate assignment to the apprehension of Simon Phoenix.
Two mortal enemies.
Just dropped in to say hi.
From another time.
Pass is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
Oh, hell.
Will be unleashed on a future that isn't big enough for the both of them. Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes, Demolition Man.
Yeah, I haven't seen this in a long time. I've seen bits and parts of it on TV, but it's been a while since I've actually sat down and watched it.
I actually want to say it's 93.
I want to say it was like mid-90s. I was like in high school when it came out.
Yeah.
So it's a guilty pleasure of Matt's, and I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I remember it being pretty entertaining and okay. So
yeah.
So we will discuss Demolition Man on next week's show for Matt on as he gets to talk about Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes, the tax evader, beating each other up. It was what Snipes got in trouble for, right? Like tax evasion.
Yeah, tax evasion.
Yeah.
He didn't want to pay him. Yeah.
But until we get to Demolition Man next week, go to the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. We're on all the apps where you can find podcasts, on Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod, and follow us on Facebook at our Facebook page and our Facebook group page. So you get all the latest updates on the show. But until next week, continue to stay safe and look out for one another. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Until next time, remember, as always, just go there
and do it. Just go there and do it.
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.